Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I am Lee Cantor, and I am joined in the studio with Mr. Stone Payton. How you doing, Stone?
Good morning, sir. I am doing well. I'm getting very excited. We got Parents Day at UGA. We've got a homecoming at Pope High School. And my wife, who will probably come back in some woolly outfit, having spent 5 straight weeks in Alaska, she comes in Friday evening. And I guess I need to hire a cleaning crew sometime between now and Friday afternoon.
Industrial strength cleaning crew.
Yeah, so no, I'm really energized. I have been looking forward to this weekend for a long time. And this has been a fun week, man. We've been launching new shows. Maybe we'll get a chance to talk about some of them later on before we close the show out. But this is one of my favorite. You know, the folks over at Training Pros introduced us to a real good friend and advocate of Business Radio X, Leanne Langford, and she, through her work with ASTD, has just helped us formulate a fantastic partnership with that association. And I just so look forward to this segment every month. This is a lot of fun.
All right, the Atlanta Workplace Learning Radio segment, where we kind of dive into workplace learning.
Yeah, and we've got a studio full this morning. We got some folks that we're going to hear from in a little bit from EBSCO Publishing. And early on, we're going to get a chance to talk with the Intercontinental Hotels Group. In fact, we're going to, at the top of the show, we'll go to him right now. Please join me in welcoming Vice President, Global Hotel Learning with IHG, Intercontinental Hotels Group, Mr. Gary Whitney. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you so much, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, we are delighted to have you. So I'm going to take a stab and suggest you're probably in the hospitality arena in some regard, but that's probably all I know about it. Give us a feel for what you guys do.
Great, will do. Intercontinental Hotels Group, we're the world's largest provider of hotel rooms. And for us, one of our great ambitions and purpose is great hotels guests love. And so that definitely keeps us out of trouble in the learning field, keeps us busy every day. Some of you might know some of our other brands, Crowne Plaza, Staybridge Suites, Holiday Inn, Holiday Inn Express. We have over 4,500 hotels in 100 countries. So, but we are a hotel company. That is correct.
So a couple of those brands are vaguely familiar, I think.
A little
you
bit.
Come across a couple of those,
once or twice in my life.
So learning in an organization of that size and complexity, it's got to run the gamut. I mean, somebody's got to be able to polish the banister, but they've also got to be able to provide stellar customer service. Mm-hmm. That's got to be an incredible test. What size group do you have that's responsible for that kind of thing?
Well, we pretty much cover the gamut. What we believe is the way we're going to win as a company is with our people. The way they think, the way they feel, and their knowledge and skills is what's going to set us apart from the competition. And so when you look at the range of type of things that we need to do in the learning space, it includes operational details, like how do you get that room clean consistently every time? But it also includes how do we ensure there's a great guest experience, and not just a guest experience, but how does that guest experience look and feel differently at a Holiday Inn versus an Intercontinental, and then everything in between. So we get involved with sales training, revenue and systems, quality, leadership development. And so indeed, it is a challenge when you look across both positions as well as geographically what we need to be thinking about in a learning context.
Now, I always wondered in the hotel world how you get that level of service where, like you mentioned, like the level of service that's considered great service at Intercontinental may be a different kind of great service than it would be at Holiday Inn Express, right? Like, so you have to define that those terms kind of early on.
Absolutely.
But then you have to communicate that to the staff. And then how do you make sure that the staff is staying compliant? Mm-hmm. Like, it's one thing of intellectually understanding that, but then it's also executing it.
Well, we do that a couple of ways. I mean, something that we have to think about when you think to some of your recent experiences in a hotel is it's not just what you do, it's how you do it. So let's say it's a coffee experience at an Intercontinental. If that's one of the things that are really going to matter most to Intercontinental, we need to be really clear in our training and reinforcement, which is where some of the informal elements come into play, in what are those 10 steps to deliver a great coffee experience. Well, at the same time, there's a style and a way, there's certain behaviors that really make that authentic. So when you're at an Intercontinental having coffee, there's certain pieces that matter most, where if you're a guest at a Holiday Inn, it might be quick and fast and fantastic with a smile, and there's a different feel at a Holiday Inn. So for us, it's a lot of fun on the learning side because we think about what you're doing. But we also have to embed how you do it because a unique branded guest experience is what really matters most. We want you to remember that that wasn't just a coffee. That was a coffee at a Holiday Inn. And so We do that through a variety of programs. We get leadership involved. You know, a lot of these types of activities have to be led from the top. We try to make sure there's support tools in place back at the hotel so they can observe it and reinforce what we're looking for. And we try to get the whole community involved, making sure everyone is focused on really delivering that great guest experience. Rather, you're directly in front of a guest, or rather you might be in a back room in a very important supporting role somewhere. We all have a role to play in the guest experience.
How do you know what the guest really wants? Or do you dictate that to a large degree and then kind of pivot and tweak as you go along?
You listen very closely to your guest and to your future guest. On the brand side of the organization, a tremendous amount of time and effort goes into gathering the right insights. And so our brands are created based on that information. Now, brand insight can come in a variety of forms. It might be a product. How big should it be? What should the lighting be? What should the lobby look like? A brand is also brought to life by people. And we know, like in our industry, in the service business, that's how you win. So there's a big emphasis on people. That's where the branded service behaviors come into play. But then you also come into process. And so usually when you look at, you know, sometimes think of a brand as the sign outside, and that's one part. But for us, based on insight on what the consumers want, what they need, and what they'll buy, we go ahead and dig into what are the product pieces, what are the people pieces, and what are the delivery pieces that are going to matter most. And then that shapes the brand in all of its capacity. So, but it starts with insight and listening close and always looking for new and different ways to understand what our customer and future customer wants and needs.
Now, how do you, when you're working with your new hire, how quickly can you get them out there actually interacting with the public?
That will vary some by hotels. So, for example, at Intercontinental Hotels Group, many of our hotels are franchised. And so there is some room and flexibility. There's an independent local owner and operator. So we provide the marketing support, communications, training, learning. We provide a variety of support pieces, but some of that discretionary choice is to them. Some of our role is to ensure they understand the IHG systems, tools, and processes, and they can bring those to bear. But I'd have to really defer. It's a street corner decision, and it's going to be very unique to the individual and when they're truly ready. So it's going to vary by hotel. There's some where a couple of days you get some basic fire life safety, you really get to embed and understand the service behaviors. And in one hotel, you might be in front of a customer in a couple of days. You know, other times it might take a week or two before you're gradually introduced. But that's where some of the on-the-job experiences come in, and the shadowing and all those pieces is getting you comfortable before you just are set free, so to speak. But that'll vary.
I'm stealing that. I'm using that in this afternoon's core team meeting that we have for Business Radio X, the street corner decision. I like that. And particularly if it turned out poorly, that was a street corner decision.
Exactly. Now, it must be a challenge dealing with the franchisees, right? Because once they're kind of running the hotel, I know they have to protect your brand, but then they're kind of, like you said, it's their show at that point.
There's a number of standards that are in place. The great news is we have a really active owner community. So we're very involved hand in hand using the Owners Association as a sounding board to get their input and feedback early and often, and also understanding what's working and not working. But a primary tool or mechanism as a company that franchises a number of hotels, it would be in our brand training standards. So if there's standards that are globally consistent, there's standards that are regionally consistent, there's standards that are appropriate by brand. And when you layer that together, there is direction and advice. There's still freedom in a framework, so they can certainly make some choices and discretionary choices on what they should do next. But we do try to lay out the fundamentals. Yeah, and you have to be selective. I can't tell you everything to do to run a great Holiday Inn. But what I can tell you is, based on this customer experience from the time they think about booking till the time they've left, there's key moments that are going to matter most. And we're going to make sure that we're very specific and deliberate and thoughtful in what we're going to do there, how we're going to do it, what it's going to feel like. And that's the guidance that the owners typically want and need. And they're a great partner, so they understand. And same is true with people. Now, one thing we have started doing differently with franchise hotels is offering additional support on the people element. So thinking about the range of people tools, how do you hire someone? How do you select them? How do you train them? We're getting more and more involved in offering advice, support, some example tools, but at the same time being very careful, because obviously legally you don't want it to be a co-employment situation. They are employees of that local owner, and there's a line that we need to be respectful of. But we are encouraging use of new and different tools that will help them get the people part of their brand absolutely right.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's an awful lot of layers to consider. You were talking about regional and cultural and all that. That's a lot of three-ring binders. Have you taken some advantage of technology and alternate methods? You know, we hear a lot. In fact, I want everyone on the panel during our time together today to address this whole issue of informal learning. You start hearing that term a lot. Speak to that a little bit, if you will.
Well, for the binders, it's interesting. We are in the process of reviewing and editing our standards, and some of it is for some brands. In some countries, the binders have gotten heavy. and in others, perhaps the binder's a little light. We are in the middle of really rethinking how we use standards to reinforce the brands. And it's also a great chance to talk about what should be in a standard. You know, do we have to tell them that the notebook goes exactly here? Is that important or not? Or versus what the uniform should look and feel like, and how the lobby should feel when a guest enters that area. And so, you know, to be honest, that piece is a work in progress. Standards, if you look across other organizations, some overdo standards, some other do, and we underdo the standards, and we just want to get it just right. But it's a work in progress.
So how about this topic of informal learning? Is that something you guys have tried to attack through IHG?
Absolutely. For us, when we look at informal learning, a majority of our time is still being spent on formal, but we've seen a few business cases. One is when you look at our end user, that next generation connects, learns, and works in new and different ways. And so because of that, we've got to look at different ways to meet them. So that's certainly one factor. The other thing that I find really fascinating is when you look at these learners that are now part of Intercontinental Hotels Group, their expectations have changed. They expect to be involved in the learning experience. As part of the learning experience, they expect to be able to connect with peers, and they also expect to be able to connect with a range of senior executives at IHG. And when you're a big global company, that's difficult in a formal situation, but it can be done informally with a blog or some other tool. And then when you couple that with some of the business drivers for us, a big factor is time to competence. So if I'm a general manager at a Holiday Inn Express and it normally takes me 12 months to be successful and fully up to speed and, you know, comfortable and confident, if I can narrow that to 6 months, that's a tremendous value to those local owners, and it's a value to us as a company too. And then just the whole idea of reusing knowledge. There's so much expertise, so many great conversations and pieces and tools and processes out there. We need to use informal as a way to leverage those and make those more accessible and immediate. And to be honest, informal has a great space for us in learning, in that it saves costs too. So if I want to bring 200 senior leaders together from across the globe, rather than fly them together, if I can create some sort of a network or a community that they can get together and communicate and share and build on ideas, that's a great cost savings for the company. So yeah, we've had some early successes, but I would also say we're in an infant stage of really fully leveraging informal learning.
Is it a challenge with having the younger people really comfortable with technology and mobile devices and tablets and things like that, and maybe the older generations aren't as comfortable of sharing and levels of transparency that maybe the younger, and then kind of getting them all to work together, because you want the young to learn from the older, but also you want the older to kind of be up to speed of what's going on from the younger.
You know, actually, I haven't seen it be as age specific. Now, occasionally you'll see it role specific. So people that do a certain job tend to have an interest in technology, so I'm cautious to say it is strictly based on the generation. You know, I've seen a range of generations, but there is a difference between those that are comfortable with technology and those that aren't, and we have those scattered across the business. So it is fascinating, and where we see that come to life in an informal learning setting is we have some that use technology every day. You know, they have all these social media tools that they use daily. They like Facebook. They're on there 4 times a day. So they're used to connecting and learning and working this way. And at the same time, somebody may not be. So one example is we have what's called a Leaders Lounge, which is an executive tool that we use. It's an informal learning space. There's some learners, and it's not age specific, but there's some learners that stay on the sidelines and they're observing. And that's still okay, because they're still picking up the content and they're still watching the conversation. They might not post, and they might not rank that conversation. They may not use all the tools, but they're still there. They're still learning. They're still taking it in. And now I'm eager to push those across. But if that's where they're comfortable, that's great. And then there's others where there's a post, and immediately they have a comment to add, or they have another tool to introduce to the conversation because they're comfortable. So certainly there are some generational differences. But at the same time, we've just generally started looking at no matter the age. There's some that are on the sidelines, but they still have a role to play. And then there's others that want to get in there and do that. And where we watch it really close is you need to bring certain expertise to the table. When you're starting an informal network, one of the first most critical important pieces is understanding who those experts are, who will bring the most knowledge to the table in an informal setting. And if they're busy, and so you have to make it easy for them to contribute. So if they're cautious to use the technology, looking at ways to help them feel comfortable and to help them get into the learning community, because that's what's going to feed success. When people come to this place and they get what they need, when they need it, how they need it, they're going to come back more and more often. So I need to get those 10% of super experts really involved, whether they're comfortable with technology or not, and contributing to the discussion.
Well, and I'll tell you, early in the conversation, you mentioned leadership support. And it's been my experience that the leaders can untrain them quicker than you can train them if you don't have it. I think we all know how important it is, but what's the magic formula? How do you get and keep leaders engaged and keep that visible enough so that it has a genuine impact on the population?
Yeah, I think 2 points to that. One is it's involved in how do you create a great community. And one topic to that is communities are born and then mature. And so you have to be patient. So you have to be open for it to evolve over time. But they need nurturing in the early stages. And that's where the leader comes in. The other thing is new communities need parents. So you need direction. You need terms. Somebody sets the pace and the voice. People are looking for role models. If you're introducing informal learning for the first time, everyone kind of looks around and says, well, how do I behave? Do I jump in enthusiastically? Do I do this cautiously? And if your CEO, if your regional presidents are on there blogging, posting ideas, sharing thoughts, suddenly it's okay, and they get a pace and a tone to how to do that. So certainly a key to establishing a community in an informal setting is remember they're born and then they mature and evolve. And so you kind of think of it as parenting at home, and some of those same rules apply. And they really do need parents, and the senior leaders need to be willing and able to step forward and be the parent, whether it's posting a blog or posting a comment to something someone somewhere has said so that they see they're engaged, and that's really impactful and quickly gets you traction.
What a great analogy. Don't go anywhere, Kevin. I want you to keep his mic open, but I want to bring in our next guest into the conversation because we're hitting on too many topics that I want to get perspectives from everybody on. Please welcome to the show, if you will, with EBSCO Publishing, Vice President Field Sales, Jerry Iannotta. How you doing, man?
Iannotta. I'm doing great. Thanks.
Iannotta.
Yes.
Iannotta.
Good morning, Stone.
I want everyone to practice that as we go around the horn.
That's right.
Iannotta. You know, my kid has, my Pope High School kid, she has a Spanish quiz today. Is that Spanish?
Italian.
Iannotta. I like it.
Yeah.
So I want to pick up on this leadership thing.
Sure.
Give us your take on that. What's been your experience in your organization in getting that level of engagement and maybe more importantly, sustaining it among the leadership ranks?
Well, historically, our focus has been in journal article content. And our company really, probably most of the listeners know us, if you went to any college within the last 20 years or so, as providing journal content for libraries. We're in approximately about 100,000 libraries globally and average about 40 million searches a day on our content. So we've been involved in education and learning for a long time, and it's only been in the last about 4 years or so that we've gotten involved with corporate learning. And one of the things that we bring to the table in the idea of informal learning is delivering content in small bites. So a 15-minute read from any one of the top journals that deals with any of the specific areas that we map the competencies to, which are over 300, is what we deliver.
But that's a big departure from the old way, right? In the
Absolutely.
Old way, you put everything you thought you knew about something, you captured it in one spot, and now you're chunking it out. Is there some science behind that, or people write
people
bigger
checks?
People
ran out of shelf space for those books.
Well, yeah, exactly, Stone. And ideally, what we were involved with was search and retrieval. So here's this big collection of content, and you search what you're interested in, and then you find it. But with corporate learning, the idea is to deliver it very quickly to the professionals like Gary and Gwen, and then let them deliver it to their end users in the format that they think is going to be best and most easily used. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges that we have is to be able to make that content available easily and to find it very easy for that end user. Because the point of this is to make you a better employee. And the point of this is to get it to you quickly. And that's the biggest challenge that we have. And we think that some of the solutions that we have really goes to that. So a 15-minute read, whether it's a journal article from one of the top journals that are in print in a number of different subject areas: HR, accounting, leadership, management, sales, marketing, or a book summary. So instead of reading a very lengthy business book, why don't we read a summary of it that really captures the main idea or theme of what that book is? And then a 15 or 20 minute read, I can deliver this to my leader or to an entry level employee.
So it facilitates this whole idea
Absolutely.
Of getting the engagement and keeping them connected.
Because one of the things that we hear all the time is one of the biggest problems that people in Gary and Gwen's position have is finding this information. Where is it? And if I can eliminate that and you can bring it to me very quickly and very efficiently, and either have it in SCORM compliance so it will work with a learning management system, or persistent link so I can put it on a website that I have, or just make it very easily available on a handheld device. I mean, my son's 28 and 27. If it's not available on their phone, it doesn't exist.
That's right.
And if it's not on the internet, it doesn't exist. So those are the challenges that we have. And we think we have some great ideas and great solutions that can really enable the end user to get the information that's vetted and it's the correct information available to them very quickly.
Now, you're talking a lot about print. Is there a place in your business model for video and audio?
Absolutely. In fact, the print has been obviously digitized and made available electronically, but video and audio is another big piece of what we hear as well and see video and audio. So absolutely. So we have video content that we can make available, as do many other companies, and audio, of course. So all media and all forms of media is very important for the end user.
So publishing has kind of expanded beyond just publishing documents.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so talk a little bit about your sweet spot, because you're in a sales and marketing role for your organization. Mm-hmm. What is that ideal client profile? Sounds like we may have a couple of them right here in the room.
Actually, it's really everybody, because not only do we represent and sell our content, but we work for a company as well. We're a Fortune 200 private company. We have over 5,000 employees, so it's kind of like the hair club for men. I like it so much that I bought the company. Not only do we sell what we have to our prospects and customers, but we use it ourselves. So we know, because we're using it all the time, how it can really best fit within somebody that we want to try to sell this to.
So, but how do you?
So it makes it very passionate for what we do.
Well, I can tell that.
Yeah.
So, but how do you even get in front of a grand poobah of learning like Gary? I mean, how do you even get on his radar?
Old school, Stone. You call and knock.
I mean, you get a lot.
You
of that,
carry
right?
the bag.
So, I mean, seriously, you got to be hard to get to. I mean, you got this brand behind you. Everybody wants to sell something to IHG, mm-hmm. right?
Well, I think what Jerry has to his benefit is this whole idea of there's three buckets of informal learning that we're trying to solve for. One is the social piece, which is the communities of practice, those expert directories. The second bucket would really be embedded informal learning. So that could be job rotations. It could be performance support tools. It could be a job portal of some sort. But the third bucket, and we need answers for all three of these buckets. The third bucket is this whole idea of on demand. So where are the books, the articles, the videos? How do I organize that in a quick, easy, fantastic way? When I'm trying to hit all three of those, plus understand informal learning at the same time, there is a need for outside expertise, support, and insight. So someone like Jerry can knock on the door and say, you know, we're doing some things in the informal learning space. We might be able to help you in on-demand and maybe one or two of your other categories as I'm evolving a strategy for informal learning. And that extra insight is helpful. Now, we may or may not do business. You know, we may look at several potential folks to partner with or to utilize as a vendor. But that education process is mutually beneficial. You know, I can share some things that are working and not working for me. He can share how the solutions are plugging into play. And everybody wins from that conversation. So
another thing too, Stone, is that ASTD has been a really big champion of us for the content that we have. 3 years ago, they acquired from us and make available on their website to all their members. So if you're a national ASTD member through the online library on the ASTD site, you have access to the largest collection of business journals digitized electronically through us and also through a very large book summary product
Nicely
for your personal
played.
Use.
Nicely
so,
done, Jerry.
So to really answer your question...
Would you like to come to work for Business Radio?
to really answer your question is that relationship with ASTD where we are really helping their members... benefit themselves professionally, this is for their personal professional use, opened up a door for us. So if they're using it there and they're using it personally, this might be something that I want to talk to these people about for my employees.
Okay, I can't stand it. We got to get Gwen in this conversation. We're going to do this thing a little differently than just going around. We got to get everybody in this conversation. Please welcome to the show Gwen McPherson, Learning and Organizational Development with Northside Hospital. Welcome to the show, Gwen.
Thank you. Good morning.
Well, and thanks for being so polite and patient, but we got to get you in on this thing.
I think she's the most important person because in her world, learning is life or death.
Yeah, no
right?
kidding.
It is.
You know,
right.
a hotel
Absolutely.
Is great, but, you know, that's the weekend. You're dealing with somebody living and dying, right?
That's right. That's our business.
The stakes are a little higher in your world.
Much higher, yes.
So how do you attack this?
Informal learning.
Right.
Well, at Northside Hospital, we really, it's a partnership between both the formal and the informal side, of course. Mm-hmm. Saving lives is our business. Northside Hospital, we are number one in the nation. We deliver more babies than any other hospital system in the country. So we are extremely busy, and now we are moving forward into the Northside Hospital Cancer Institute. So it has to be very relevant. Our measurement really is at the end with our patient experience because it's at the bedside. So the informal pieces for us are more around preceptor, having a strong preceptor program, very strong mentoring program, so that our clinicians are partnered up, if you will. They get the knowledge in the classroom, but then it has to count at the bedside.
Now, you hang out with this ASTD crowd as well?
A little bit, yes.
Yeah? Well, and this is not news to us, because we've had ASTD folks in here just singing their praises, but this is obviously just a fantastic wellspring of support, really lends itself to the whole thought leadership approach to the sales and marketing. So over at Northside, mm-hmm. I don't want to get off of this leadership engagement. I see it fall apart too often. Are you able to, first, I guess is the first question I should ask, and if so, how are you able to keep the leadership engaged and really supporting your learning efforts?
Well, we have a really strong leadership community, if you will, and a part of clinical excellence is having highly competent leaders. They drive the business all the way down to the nurse or technician
at the
bedside.
Even to the doctor?
Even to the physician. Yeah. If they're not competent, we have a problem.
Well, because sometimes they don't have their frame of reference of communication is different because, you know, they got a lot of things going on and they think what they're doing is extremely important. It is extremely important. But they may not have kind of the patience that some other people in the organization might have.
I would have to say we have an outstanding group of physicians. We also have EBSCO hosts at Northside Hospital for our physicians portal.
Jerry, I am impressed.
Thank you.
EBSCO's everywhere.
We are.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
We have them have EBSCO as well as a resource for our physicians through the portal as well. One way that we're looking more to expand is to be able to provide that content and information for everyone, because again, that is the way of informal learning. People want it at their fingertips,
and they want it when they want it.
And they want it when they want it, and they have to be able to access it in between taking care of patients.
Right.
So when going after funding to acquire any kind of learning resource, whether it's tangible or it's to get expertise in, or if it's to get additional funding for internal resources, are you asked to articulate return on investment, connect it to business drivers, those kinds of things? Is that language that gets thrown around even in a hospital environment?
Yes, it sure is. We are constantly asked to show a return on our investment as far as informal and formal learning. And sometimes there are challenges there because, again, informal learning is more of a low-cost but high-impact product. So it's a matter of showing results from our patients' experience, what the patients give us feedback on. We know it's working when the patients can say, and they survey us, our patient satisfaction scores show the results. They tell us whether or not we're doing a really fabulous job or where we can improve.
Now, do you use any of the kind of gamification elements that Gary was mentioning, like on his forum where you get credit for ranking, and there are certain things that you can engage in kind of an easy way? Do you do things like that?
We're not doing any kind of gamification at this point in time. But we certainly have looked into
some other
options. Yeah, we have.
He asks that question every time we do this series.
I just like to say gamification.
He likes to say gamification, and he loves anything where you can play and earn and compete. So in the patented Jerry Sales Method, is there language that specifically makes it a little easier for these folks when they've got to go to the executive ranks and try to pull on some purse strings that talks about ROI, drivers, those kind of things? Do you approach it that way, or do you sit down and
That's a great question, Stan. In fact,
that really was a good question.
Yeah, we talked about this in a green room, in fact, and it's the biggest challenge that we have, and that what our prospects and clients have is how do you show this as a return on investment? It's difficult to measure something that's unmeasurable, and that's what informal learning is. I mean, it isn't Big Brother where we want you to take a test after you read this, and we're going to keep grades and we're going to keep track of your scores. That's not the concept of this. And we were even saying earlier that reading something or hearing something or watching something that reinforces something you know is still learning. And it still makes you feel better about yourself. And if you feel better about yourself in the morning, you'll probably do a better job during the day. So how do you measure that? And how do you put a price tag or a dollar figure on that? If you have an idea, we're open to that because we'd love to write a white paper that goes to this.
Well, I think people are struggling with that in all aspects. I mean, look at the Chicago public school system is battling over these kind of measurement tools right now. Now, Gwen, you survey a lot. That's your way of measuring, right?
Right, one way, yes. Our patients receive a survey after they leave us upon discharge. And the survey is not about clinical outcomes. It is truly about how we treated
them. The experience.
That's right, how we made them feel. And so one initiative, for example, in the world of healthcare is around emotional support.
Right.
And the way we have to provide, it's more of an informal learning process to make sure our clinicians and clinical staff show strong emotional support, making connections with each and every patient.
Right, so they're not just checking boxes and, you know, making them wait and do things like that. You want to kind of encourage that feel-good thing so when they're leaving, they're wagging their tail.
That's exactly right.
No matter the outcome.
That's exactly right.
Right.
Gary, I think you had something smart to say.
Yeah,
I
could
I saw
tell.
You,
you were chomping at the bit over there. Sorry about that.
He threw his notes away 10 minutes ago.
I slowed away. Yeah. I was just going to add to the business case conversation that at least for us, and I think it would be true for many organizations, is there's a couple spots to look for business case. One is certainly time to competence that we touched on earlier. The reuse of knowledge. As Jerry touched on, there's a big need in the business to have quick and consistent responses. And so informal provides a tool and a mechanism to ensure quick and consistent responses in no matter your field. And then for measures, I don't know if this is useful to the listeners or not, but you know, we've been starting to show some of the value and productivity, some of the early indicators of success in things like contribution. So what's the volume of contributions to this site? How frequently are people using it? To what depth? You know, maybe there's layers to a site. How far are they getting? Certainly feedback, who's using the comments and the rankings. That's a good source of early insight that you're seeing the behaviors that will lead to the organizational impact. And then the third is general activity. So maybe there's great access at one level of the organization, but the goal is to get a few more functions involved. It's a great tool to which to break down silos, and most leaders of industry will say there is a real value if I can get this organization pulling together across the groups and that they're not getting caught up in their silos.
Now, are you finding that there's like kind of a bell curve in terms of the use of these new technologies where you get the handful of people that are super hyperactive and they just love them, they're all over the place, and then you get a chunk of people that are kind of lurking and they're just, you know, they're checking here and there, but they're not really participating, they're reading, like you're saying, that still counts. Mm-hmm. But is there, like, what percentage are the people who are just ignoring this? No, really, there has to be a chunk of people that are ignoring the effort.
I think it depends on the industry. For us, we see a lot of folks on the sideline. The tool is important. When we look at the frequency of how often they're coming to some of these tools, it's high. And they're consuming products. Maybe they're downloading a tool or they're downloading a piece of content or they're taking a look at something that they need. A couple things that we've learned is it's got to be quick, slick, and fantastic. So for us, a typical person that logs into our Leaders Lounge, for example, is there 8 minutes or less? So knowing that, holy buckets, that's a business term, by the way, is you have to get them something really quick. They need to be able to find it, and they need to get the heck out. And so that's been a key learning along the way for us.
So 8 minutes is kind of a number, or that just how it falls in your organization?
In our organization, that's how it's fallen, is they get in really quick, which is actually a good sign. If they spent 3 hours on an informal learning site of some sort,
it's too good.
It's too good. Yeah, so they're coming in, they're getting what they need, and they're going, which is actually it meets a very specific need, which is great. And then, you know, we're looking at new and different ways. And one of the things that I find useful here is, to your point, there's a lot of folks on the sideline. What we need to remember as learning leaders is we need to spend just as much time embedding it and making it stick as we do creating it. So often we get so excited. We've created a portal or we've created a lounge of informal users or whatever it is. then we're excited and we go on to the next project, we have to remember to commit time and energy and resources to actually making it stick. And that's one way to get the people off the sidelines and into the tool.
Well, what I like about this is this also lets the highest level senior executive metaphorically swing in, have one cocktail and leave back out and leave some value there. And so it can be very time efficient. They can just check in and share a couple thoughts or distribute just a little bit of information.
And not only time efficient, but it can be high impact at low cost. Mm-hmm. And those are some of the buzzwords that we hear. And also what Gary said, we've heard for a long time, we've only been in this for 4 years, but for the last 4 years, is that it can't be less than 5 minutes. So what I'm giving you, if you can read this or listen to this or watch this in under 5 minutes, you're really not going to get much out of it. And it can't be more than 15 or 20. So it's got to be somewhere within that medium. So the 8 minutes that Gary mentioned is ideal. So we think anywhere between 8 and 15, you can really grasp and get a very good idea of something that can be revolutionary to you. And also, if you can get the people in the C-suite to take a look at it and to become attached and enthused with it, then it's going to trickle down to everywhere. And that bell curve that you asked about earlier, we traditionally have found that 20% of the people are going to adopt this right away. They're going to adopt anything that you make available to them. 20% of them are never going to use it. So it's the rest of us that fall in the middle of who we want to really try to capture and who we want to try to get involved. And if you can get that, then I think we've all done our job.
Now, Gwen, do you have mechanisms in the hospital that kind of integrate for leadership all the way down into lower level people where they can kind of...
We do, but they are also very informal. So our challenge is getting it across the board to everyone having accessibility to that kind of content.
And then are you finding the same kind of results where it's that kind of, you get some heavy users, you get some people lurking, and then some people that just won't participate?
That's exactly right. The same kind of...
The challenges seem to be universal then?
Across the board. Not that much different from a hotel.
Before we wrap today, and we got to have these guys back. I mean, there's just a ton of stuff to talk about. But before we wrap today, I want to circle back to ASTD and get some insight into, for the listeners out there, if they're considering becoming involved with ASTD, what is the best way for them to truly capitalize on that opportunity to get involved? I'd open it up to everybody. But let's start with you, Gwen. You're not trying to market anything. You've got a whole different set of reasons for being a part of it. But what insight, what counsel would you have to offer for organizations? Why should they get involved? And once they decide to do that, what's the best way for them to really get their return on investment?
I would say one of the best ways I know to really get involved is really anyone that has a computer, just log on to the ASTD website and just honestly go in and check it out. The local chapter has been very supportive, and it's a great networking tool for all of us. A lot of us in healthcare and outside of healthcare are logging in, we're talking, we're chatting. So it's a great resource for anything, really, no matter what your industry.
Fantastic. Guys, we'll start with you, Gary. What's your thoughts on this?
Well, for me, one of the great benefits is networking, knowing you're not alone. So we may be facing a challenge with informal learning, or I need to develop a new measurement strategy. Well, there's lots of other folks facing those same challenges and same questions. So I think one of the great values of ASTD is this whole idea of the network. It's also a great source for content, which I find helpful. And they even do a wonderful job breaking into specialty groups. So if there's a certain element of learning technologies, there's groups that have the same interest. And so to share the practice and to have that network, to pick up new and different tips and tricks, it's wonderful. So I think any one of those three is a great reason to get involved with the local chapter or nationally. So.
And from you too, Jerry, and while you're at it, let's make sure we have coordinates, a website, phone number, whatever, to get to ASTD, learn more, and also if you know of any upcoming events that our listeners should know about.
I don't. For local, as Gwen said, the ASTD website, if you go to that, if you're a member, you click on, to access the content that we have on there, you click on the members log on, and then you enter your membership, and then under that, there's a box that will say the online library. And it's not only our content that's on there. There's other content that they license as well that's available. But just with what Gary and Gwen said is that it's the best way, I think, for professionals to interact with each other. I've been in sales since 1980, a traveling salesman. And when I started, these types of things weren't available. And what I heard from a lot of my customers, my clients over that time was that they learned more from the traveling salesman because they're telling them what they're hearing and seeing in other libraries, business that I was in other libraries. We don't have to rely on that anymore. these associations really lend themselves to networking professionally from peer to peer, and ultimately for us to talk to our prospects and clients.
Fantastic. What a fun show. Seriously, we got to have these folks back.
It was good stuff.
Absolutely.
Do you want to give everybody go around, and you want to start with you, Gwen, the Northside website?
www.northside.com.
There you go.
Very simple.
Simple, Gary.
You can search for Intercontinental Hotels Group anywhere, any place, anytime, and hopefully if you stay with us, thank you.
All right. And EBSCO Publishing, www.ebscohost.com. And also, we also have our contents available to public libraries in Georgia as well. And if you have a library card, you can access that free.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you all, everybody. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.